I'm Bill Littlefield. Among this week's three stories you should know is one with which you're probably already much too familiar, but we can't leave it out. My guests are Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal and Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports. Welcome back to both of you.
It's good to be here.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, my story is first. This week, former Stanford student Brock Turner, who had been convicted of sexually assaulting an unconscious woman on the Stanford campus in 2015, was sentenced to 6 months in prison and probation. Turner's attorney, the probation officer, and the judge all referred to Turner's accomplishments as a swimmer, and apparently the assumption all around was that because Turner forfeited great opportunities as an athlete when he committed and was convicted of the felonies that we're talking about, he's already suffered significant punishment. If the victim had been a potentially great athlete whose career was delayed or compromised or ruined because Turner raped her, would Turner's sentence have been longer, I wonder? Based on the reactions of the sentencing, which have been all over the internet, I know I'm not the only person who thinks that considering a man's athletic prowess and potential when deciding how long he should be incarcerated for sexually assaulting an unconscious woman is insane, criminally insane, maybe. There's a campaign to encourage Congress to pass a law to strengthen efforts to combat sexual violence on college campuses. This week's news about the sentencing of Brock Turner makes me wonder if maybe that is something that's absolutely necessary. I don't know how else this should be addressed.
Well, one of the remarkable things about this absolutely despicable scenario is that this case had not one but two witnesses, which is almost unheard of in a sexual assault case. So it was even more shocking that the punishment was so lenient. I think anything you can do legally or otherwise to make sure that the proper punishment is meted out would be the right thing to do.
This is what we do in our society. We got up these athletes, we got up their accomplishments, and they're wonderful entertainers, and it's inspiring to see human performance pressed to its limit. But at some point, it is just a sport. It is only a game, and it shouldn't have any bearing on a sexual assault case. I mean, period. There's no debate. And like Rachel said, this is a case. This was like as close to an open and shut sexual assault case as you will ever find, and still get 6 months. Think about what that means. If you are a victim of sexual assault and you look at this campus adjudication system that's a giant mess, but now you look to real law enforcement, it's no wonder so many sexual assaults never go reported.
Many women are discouraged from even coming forward, particularly in cases where they're accusing athletes, because they are often abused again on social media and in the court of public opinion. So that just underscores the disappointment that a lot of people are feeling about how this case turned out.
Patrick, this is perhaps an impossible corner to turn, but we need to turn the corner anyway. I understand that you've been paying attention to the Atlanta Braves, who have been terrible on the field this season, and the bad news does not end on the field, right?
No, it doesn't. I mean, so my story involves the new baseball stadium being built for the team. It's out in the suburbs of Cobb County. And this week we found out back in 2008, residents of that county voted for $40 million of new parks. You know, not ballparks to enrich billionaire owners and millionaire players, just public parks to enrich the rest of us. But it turns out the money for that is now being siphoned off to help pay for this new baseball stadium. And if those people want their parks, they're going to have to raise their taxes. A 5-person local commission approved this deal without any public debate. They got around open meeting laws by standing in hallways. And all of this is happening to replace a current ballpark that is all of 20 years old. Now, here's the really bad news. There's worse fiascos going on just right now. Glendale, Arizona, they've paid $300 million plus for a hockey team that's going to leave town anyway. I could go on. This isn't a congressional filibuster. But the takeaway here is that cities never seem to learn. And even when they do, and I do think public opinion is turning slowly against these massive corporate welfare projects, politicians find way to pass this stuff anyway.
But I think in a lot of cases, in a lot of cities, fans are complicit. The late, great Hubert Humphrey from my home state of Minnesota said, without the Minnesota Vikings, we'd be a cold Omaha. And I think that is a constant fear in various states and cities, that if we lose our major league franchises we will be lesser than. And sure enough, right now, construction of a new Minnesota Vikings stadium is nearing its end. Guess what? Half of it was publicly funded.
Talk to any economist who's ever studied this. If you're looking to stimulate your local economy, they will tell you you are literally better off dropping cash from helicopters and airplanes over the downtown than building a stadium.
All right, Rachel, I hear that your story involves hamster wheels and power drills and puppies as well, and I'm very much in favor of puppies, so please explain.
Yes, well, this all has to do with corporate step challenges and their increasing popularity as companies try to keep their health insurance costs down by encouraging their workers to move more. And so these contests get people to see who can take the most steps in a few weeks or months. There's just one problem with them. They can be cheated. In fact, in some cases, people are cheating with no money on the line. The people I spoke with and the companies I spoke with who operate these challenges said they've seen everything from people attaching their Fitbits or activity trackers to ceiling fans to rack up all kinds of overnight activity to hamster wheels, as you mentioned. To their favorite schnauzer or black lab.
Right. The puppy has no objection at all to running with a Fitbit on his paw, I'm sure.
Absolutely not. These things are very light, very easy to use. You know, I spoke with one guy, one of the few, who was brave enough to admit he had cheated. And he attached his Fitbit to a power saw. And 5 hours later, voila, 57,000 steps richer.
First of all, who would imagine cheating in corporate America? That's never happened. And secondly, of course people are cheating. This is like human nature. It's not just an American thing. I mean, if you look at like amateur cycling and stuff, people take steroids in that to win races where they pay to enter the race. There's not even prize money.
Rachel, did you come away from your investigation of this story feeling worse or better about human nature?
I have to say, Bill, in some ways I felt better because people were so incredibly creative in the ways they tried to cheat. They weren't necessarily good at it, but they showed incredible ingenuity, and there really is nothing more American than that.
My guests for Three Stories You Should Know have been Rachel Bachman of The Wall Street Journal and Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports. Thank you, both of you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Bill.